You're listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network. Welcome to Dolphins Talk Weekly, your one-stop audio breakdown of all of this week's Miami Dolphins news. Now, here is your host, Kevin Durr.
Good morning and happy Monday to you, Dolphins fans. It's a victory Monday as Miami defeated the Atlanta Falcons over the weekend. Welcome to episode 27 of Dolphins Talk Weekly. I am your host, Kevin Dern. Please give me a follow on Twitter at KevinMD4 and follow the show, Dolphins Talk Weekly, on iTunes, Spotify, Spreaker, or wherever else you get your podcasts. On this week's episode, we will obviously talk about the Miami Dolphins victory over the Atlanta Falcons from Saturday night. I'll go over the Xavien Howard contract restructure and my overall thoughts on it. I forgot to do that on the podcast last week. I know I mentioned it early in the episode and forgot to circle back to it. I was a little too excited about having preseason meaningful football back in 2021. And then I'll also talk about some of the housekeeping and signings and stuff that was the week of Atlanta, and then I'll give my thoughts on a couple things that I want to see in the preseason finale against the Cincinnati Bengals. But first, a word from our sponsor, Manscaped. Fantasy football draft season is upon us, and it's time you put the PP back in PPR league with the sponsors of today's show, Manscaped. The leader in below-the-waist grooming just launched the new Performance Package 4.0. Don't neglect your balls like the Packers front office has been neglecting Aaron Rodgers. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get ready for kickoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code DolphinsTalk. This will help you tame that Troy Polamalu in your pants. Remember, go to manscaped.com to get 20% off plus free shipping with the code DolphinsTalk. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code DolphinsTalk at manscaped.com. If your significant other is nagging you about how much time you put into your fantasy team, you might as well gift them some beautiful balls with Manscaped. Thank you to our good friends at manscaped.com for sponsoring Dolphins Talk Weekly. We'll dive into the Xavien Howard contract restructure. Now, the financial part of it, they guaranteed $12.975 million, which was an injury guarantee Xavien Howard had in his contract for 2022. They converted that to a full guarantee, plus his original base salary, which was $6.775 million in 2022. So the total comes to about $16.3 million guaranteed for Xavien Howard in 2022, and they agreed to revisit his contract next spring. So basically, they were able to satisfy Xavien Howard's contract desires, and they locked up, in my opinion, the best cornerback in all of football. And we've talked about it all offseason. I was a big proponent of figuring out how to appease Xavien Howard and make this situation, you know, kind of go away. And I think that the Dolphins were able to do that. And what it does, in my opinion, in terms of the 30,000-foot view, is you've basically locked up the majority of your key parts for the next 2 to 3 years, almost across the board. Really, the two big names that you don't have locked up at this point are tight end Mike Gesicki and defensive end Emmanuel Ogba. And I do kind of wonder if once Miami gets through the remaining preseason game against Cincinnati and you go through all the roster cutdowns and waiver wire claims and practice squads and sort of the hustle and bustle, as Jeff Ireland once put it on Hard Knocks, once they get through all of that, I wonder if they start to maybe revisit, you know, contract extensions for Ogba and Gesicki and see if they can lock up the team. But the reason I think that's such a crucial thing, and we talked about this, is, you know, Tua Tagovailoa has looked very good so far in the preseason, but there's no guarantee that this keeps up in the regular season when the bullets are for real. You know, there's no guarantee he becomes an elite quarterback in the sphere of, you know, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Aaron Rodgers, one of those types of players. There just isn't. But what it does do is it allows Miami to keep the majority of their core of this roster intact for the next 3 years, and that gives you, in my opinion, a longer runway to keep your winning window, your championship window, open. And I would say this year is really kind of the first year that it is open. You know, I would expect Miami to make the playoffs, and if they don't, you know, unless there's a huge wave of injuries that befall key players, that not making the playoffs would be a disappointing end to the season. And I think you'd really have to kind of start to reassess if you're Stephen Ross. You know, obviously we've got some time before week one of the regular season kicks off. I'm going to enjoy some college football, but more importantly, I'm going to enjoy watching Xavier Howard in the Aqua and Orange again this year. I think he allows them to do so many key things with the defense that go unnoticed, and perhaps we'll do an episode breaking those down, you know, as we get into the season and more All-22 film becomes available. I still don't think Game Pass has fixed that quite yet. But just trust me on this. As someone who has studied, you know, the Brian Flores system and the Dolphins defense probably more than anybody since he's been hired, having Xavier Howard here is a huge thing. And, you know, Noah Igbinoghene, by all accounts, hasn't had the greatest of camps. You know, to me, it sounds like he's sort of pressing and lacking a little bit of confidence. You know, he's got the athleticism, he's got the athletic traits and the ability to become a good corner. I just think he's still kind of learning the position overall and just doesn't quite have that confidence. He looked pretty good in the Bears game, not as good against Atlanta, in my opinion. But he certainly has the traits that you'd want to be patient with, in my opinion, and, you know, keep developing him, because you never know when you may need him down the line, and you want to, you know, keep his confidence up, keep helping him develop. I mean, just look at Nick Needham. He was awful in the 2019 preseason, got cut, spent some time on the practice squad. He lost like 12, 13 pounds and then reinserted himself into the lineup for like the final, what, 8 or 10 games. And, you know, you'd be hard-pressed, in my opinion, to find a better backup cornerback than he is. And he may still have a chance to win the slot job, you know, for all intents and purposes. We just don't know. So, overall, love the fact that they are able to get Xavier Howard back and happy, and he's back out there and doing things that Xavier Howard does. He looked pretty good the brief time he was out there against the Falcons. And, you know, still way too early to be giving up on Noah Igbinoghene. Have patience with him. He may end up helping the Dolphins down the road somewhere else. I would still love to see them maybe tap into his athletic potential and try him in the slot if the situation arises, but all in all, great news that they got Xavier Howard's contract situation resolved, and I just saw tonight that he was named number 17 on the NFL's top 100 of this past season. That's a little too low, in my opinion, but, you know, congratulations to X, and glad to have him back for the season. Now, obviously, Miami made some other roster news. They signed a linebacker who had played with the Washington football team last year. He got a couple of reps in the game against Atlanta, and there's no way he's going to make the active roster, in my opinion. So we'll just kind of skip over that. The bigger news was that Miami traded for former second-round pick Greg Little, the tackle from the Carolina Panthers, giving up a seventh-round pick in 2022. I mean, it's a seventh-round pick, you know, you're not really getting a huge player there, you know, in my opinion, you know, looking at what they've done over the past few drafts. So I think that's perfectly fine to make a dice roll. Miami's got plenty of other picks in tow. You know, I wasn't super impressed with Greg Little against Atlanta. I'd imagine he'll probably get to play quite a bit against Cincinnati. But as of now, Larnell Coleman as the backup left tackle has been more intriguing to me than Greg Little. And before we get into the review of the Atlanta Falcons game, guys, it is sports betting season, and it is in full force with the Major League Baseball playoff races heating up. College football comes up next weekend, and we've got the NFL regular season starting just around the corner. And you need a sports book with integrity and longevity like BetUS. You may already know this, but BetUS have been pioneers in the sportsbook industry for almost 3 decades, thriving and paying their loyal customer base. That is BetUS.com, BetUS.com, and they have loads of bonuses. Join now or call 800-69-BET-US. That is 800-MY-BET-US. We receive 125% sign-up bonus by using the code DOLPHINSTALK. They have re-up and referral bonuses as well. BetUS is known as America's favorite sports book for lots of reasons. BetUS has all your MLB, college football, and NFL games with team and player prop bets and loads of NFL futures and NFL odds up already. You can bet UFC matches and props, PGA golf and round matchups, and live betting on most sports, including golf. The online casino has hundreds of games, and the racebook has all of your horse tracks available. They have every bet type imaginable, and the sharp BetUS mobile platform is easy with full betting options. Follow my lead and get your phone, online, and social sports betting partner with integrity and longevity like I did. BetUS. You bet, you win, you get paid. BetUS. And thank you to the fine folks at BetUS for sponsoring Dolphins Talk Weekly and the Dolphins Talk family of podcasts. So now, we'll get into the meat of the show and review Miami's preseason victory, a 37-17 victory over the Atlanta Falcons. Now, I think we have to start by just putting some context out there. We didn't really see Atlanta's full force, you know, number ones. You know, Matt Ryan obviously didn't play. Calvin Ridley didn't play. They had multiple offensive linemen that didn't play in the game. So, let's get that out of the way. And I think a big thing, at least for me, Miami did what you would expect them, well, really want them to do to another team's, you know, number two mixed unit, basically. And that's dominate them in the first half of the game. There's been far too many years where Miami has looked mediocre against other teams' mixed units and second stringers. That was not the case Saturday night. And I haven't been able to listen to Brian Flores' post-game media or his media from Sunday yet. I was only able to watch the game today, Sunday as I record this, as you're listening on a Monday or thereafter most likely. But I've seen several people tweet out that basically Brian Flores made it seem like this was the, you know, air quotes here, the dress rehearsal game, and that the week three game at Cincinnati will be more of a game for the bottom of the roster players to kind of duke it out for final spots and practice squad spots and those types of things. Obviously, Atlanta didn't treat it similarly, so maybe go back and look at some of the practice reports from day one and two to kind of get your judge on, you know, how the Dolphins fared. But to me, overall, it was a pretty basic, pretty vanilla style game plan, other than a few, you know, wrinkles here and there. Obviously, they had the jet sweep, tap pass, whatever you want to call it, to Jalen Waddle. You know, that was something a little bit different. And then defensively, Miami ran a lot of their odd Mako or 5-0 front. You know, Sam McGuavin had three of his four sacks coming out of that front. That's something that ordinarily they probably wouldn't show in the preseason, but they only ran it with maybe one or two guys who are actually going to be a part of that package, you know, barring injury, once we get to week one. So I'm just going to kind of work down the offensive list, then the defensive list, and then we'll talk about what I want to see and maybe some of the key positional battles for final roster spots in week three against Cincinnati. So starting off, you know, Tua Tagovailoa, you know, played very, very well. I think the biggest thing that jumps out for me is how quick, how decisive, how athletic he was able to move in the pocket. You know, there were several times where an opposite jersey color kind of flashed in front of him. He calmly sidestepped it and made an accurate throw. You know, perfect example is the touchdown pass to Miles Gaskin. I think Michael Dieter and Robert Hunt had sort of a miscommunication. Someone came in on Hunt that I don't think he was expecting. Tua sidestepped it and found Gaskin on the move. Easy money for a touchdown. So that was great to see with Tua. I thought he threw with pretty good velocity all night. Was very, very accurate, save for one throw. And to me, that throw was the quick out route to Jalen Waddle that Atlanta ended up challenging and winning as the ball hit the ground. You know, if Tua is able to kind of keep that high and outside and lead Waddle, which is tough because Tua is a lefty and he's throwing to the right. You know, it would be tough for a right-handed quarterback to lead and throw to the left, you know, just opposite biomechanics there. But if he's able to do that, you know, it gives Jalen Waddle a chance to make a catch and turn up field and get a couple extra yards after the catch. But all in all, I was very pleased with his performance. The one sack that they had, I think that was more of a pass protection error on Malcolm Brown. You know, I've seen a couple people tweet out about Jesse Davis. Yes, Jesse Davis didn't do a great job there. But I think if Malcolm Brown is able to get that, I don't know if it was a safety or a slot corner. Either way, he wasn't able to pick up that defender coming off the edge backside. I think if he's able to do that, Tua probably gets the ball off or is able to kind of exit the pocket rather than have to step up and into that traffic. So, you know, all in all, I thought Tua played really well. You know, good job by him on that, you know, not even a two-minute drill, the final 30 seconds drill to hammer the ball to Mac Hollins and then Gaskin to set up the field goal try. Now, apparently Jason Sanders is human because the ball sailed on him wide left a little bit, you know, from 57, 58 yards. I think we can all live with that. You know, he's the best kicker in the NFL. He'll be fine. As far as the running backs go, I think Miles Gaskin, Malcolm Brown, and Savon Ahmed have kind of cemented themselves as the 1-2-3 punch for Miami. You know, you have Gaskin who kind of does a little bit of everything. Brown is sort of the big power back, short yardage, third down back type of guy. And then Savon Ahmed can be the speedster that comes in and does some different things for you out of the backfield, out wide as a receiver. And then you can hit him outside on some of those stretch runs. And, you know, as far as Malcolm Brown goes, I know a lot of people kind of tweeted about Jordan Howard references and things like that after the Chicago game. Malcolm Brown's fine, just like I said he would be. Most of that was blocking and offensive line issues against the Bears. He did much better other than that pass pro miscue on the Tua Tagovailoa sack. He did much better overall in the game against Atlanta. You know, as far as Jared Doakes, I liked what I saw from him, but it's, you know, it's kind of what you see is what you get. You know, that's what he was at Cincinnati. You know, for a bigger back, he's got soft hands. He's not overly explosive. I don't think he has, you know, the terrific vision that Miles Gaskin has or that ability to cut it back. He just kind of moves forward and churns out yardage for you. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. I think there's a role for it. I do wonder, though, however, if Patrick Laird's special teams ability is enough to kind of trump Jared Doakes for a roster spot. And maybe they try and stash Doakes on the practice squad because he's basically the same type of player that Malcolm Brown is. So we'll see what happens there. We didn't really see a fullback per se. I don't believe Seathan Carter played in the game. Carl Tucker got in late, but they ran a lot of, you know, split zone when he was in, so he didn't really have a lead block opportunity, at least that I saw. You know, for context, I watched the first half 3 times. I watched the second half once. As far as receivers go, you know, Jalen Waddle to me looks like the real deal. Very explosive. He's very quick after he catches the ball. He's quick in and out of his breaks. We saw the punt return last week against the Bears. You know, I'm really excited to see all the different ways they use him. You know, he had the little jet sweep play where he got the first down. You know, he looks like the real deal. Mac Hollins, to me, you know, if they keep 6 receivers, I think he's the final guy. You know, he has had a great camp. To me, I just don't see the receiver core, you know, barring a trade or something like that. I don't see how it isn't going to include Devontae Parker, Will Fuller, Jalen Waddle, Albert Wilson, and then, you know, probably one of, you know, Mac Hollins, and then maybe one of Bowden, Grant, or Robert Foster. I know there's a lot of hype around Kirk Merritt. I just don't understand it. I know he's had great workout numbers, but to me, he just seems like your run-of-the-mill, you know, bottom of the roster receiver, practice squad type of receiver. You know, he'll need to have a big game against Cincinnati, in my opinion, to make a push for a roster spot. He could probably land a roster spot somewhere else in the NFL. I just think the numbers game might be too tough for him to overcome in Miami, barring some sort of trade. You know, I obviously left off Preston Williams' name. We don't really know where he factors in. Maybe he's already solidified his spot. You know, I guess we'll see. One thing to note in that battle as it relates to Merritt and Foster, the opening kickoff of the game, I'm not sure which one of the two, because I think they were the 4 and the 5 man, the 2 widest men to the left side, but one of them let up contain, and the Falcons returner was able to bounce outside for some additional yardage. So I'm not sure who it was, but that'll be a strike against one of those guys, I'm sure, given Brian Flores' background and nature of loving special teams. You know, the tight end room, at this point, Seathan Carter's three-year contract be damned. I'm ready to roll with Gesicki, Smythe, Shaheen, and Long. Hunter Long, not a dominant blocker by any means. I don't even know if he was a good blocker. But as far as running interference and at least getting a guy turned out of the way, I thought he did pretty well against, Atlanta's threes and fours, I guess, who were in the game at that point. Would like to see him play a decent amount against Cincinnati if he's still healthy. Was intrigued by that. I know he's kind of known as more of a receiver, was the only tight end to have more catches than Kyle Pitts last year. But I was overall pretty intrigued by his game. And obviously Gesicki did Gesicki things. Durham Smythe, I think, got a little banged up, but had some nice blocks, as did Shaheen. So I think that room's pretty solidified. I still am a little baffled about the Seathan Carter thing, unless they have designs on moving on from Durham Smythe, but I just don't think Seathan Carter is as good of a blocker as Smythe. Now, the O-line, that was kind of the big one. I don't know when they're going to get to it, but I think that at least of the players they have now, the best line from left to right is going to end up being Jackson, Kinley, Dieter, Hunt, and Eichenberg. No disrespect to Jesse Davis, who's the consummate pro, has started games at four different spots, but Jesse had a few whiffs in the running game. I thought Liam Eichenberg was more effective in the running game, and he looked a little bit smoother in the pass protection area. Obviously not against Atlanta's ones, so I'd love to see Eichenberg get to play more against Cincinnati and see if maybe he can challenge for that starting role by week one. But I think that's where they've got to get. And in terms of O-line depth, the loser of that Davis-Eichenberg battle, I think, is obviously on the roster. I think Matt Skura is a really nice depth piece to have at center. I've been intrigued by Jermaine Illuminor, and I've been intrigued by Larnell Coleman. I was more intrigued by Coleman than Greg Little. Maybe they still go shopping or looking around the waiver wire for tackle depth, but I don't really know what you're going to get at this point. So that was kind of my thoughts on the O-line. I thought they all kind of took turns having some up and down moments. Robert Hunt and Eichenberg were really good in the run game. Eichenberg and Davis had some nice moments in the run game. A lot of those stretch plays to the right side of the line ended up working pretty well. Austin Jackson had the holding penalty. That thing can be cleaned up a little bit. Solomon Kinley had a couple of poor reps, especially as they got close to the red zone. But then I believe it was on Malcolm Brown's touchdown run, he had the best block out of anybody on the offensive line that kind of cleared the hole for him to get into the end zone. You just need to see more consistency from Jackson and Kinley on that left side. I think they have it in them. They did pretty well last year when they were paired together in, I believe it was the Chiefs game and the Patriots game, were the two games they were on the left side together. Austin Jackson looked a little better in pass protection. Obviously, there's some things that this offense is going to do that are going to kind of mask struggles of Jackson and any other lineman. The ball's going to come out quick a lot. There were a couple reps where Jackson, kind of gave up his inside post, but the ball was already gone or Tua was already in the act of throwing, so that, there will be no statistical pressure, but still some reps that you can see technique get cleaned up. And if you look at elite left tackles around the league, like Laremy Tunsil didn't have those. He was a master at the jump set. Teron Armstead's got that super grip strength. Tyron Smith has that grip strength. Bakhtiari, for my money, holds a lot and doesn't get called, but he's very good at, being a technician. I think Austin Jackson has his work cut out for him to kind of get to that level, but he's not as bad as a lot of fans want to make him out to be. And in my opinion, those first four games last year, until he got hurt, were pretty good. Kinley, to me, I think you just need more consistency. He's such a powerful player, and if he gets his technique right, he can be pretty good. And that's why I would kind of hope they keep Jermaine Illuminor as a backup to Kinley, because they're kind of one and the same, but you need that powerful force to be effective in this offense, especially with a lot of the inside zone stuff that they'll do. But overall, a much better effort. I guess, you know, Cincinnati has a pretty formidable defensive front. They have a lot of good players. Khalid Kareem, Sam Hubbard, DJ Reader, Cameron Sample, the rookie from Tulane, has been good. Joseph Osai, I don't know if he played against Washington, but he did play well in their first preseason game. I don't know how many of those guys or how many snaps all of those guys will play, but it would at least be a formidable line to see some reps against. So maybe you throw those starting five out there for, you know, a series or two. Maybe Davis gets one and maybe Eichenberg gets one at right tackle, and you kind of see which one, you know, does better against the Bengals. On the defensive side of the ball, very, very vanilla. We saw a lot of very basic 3-4 looks. We saw the 3-3 slide front, which is basically a 4-2 where you have a stand-up defensive end, which was Andrew Van Ginkle almost exclusively, while the first string was in. Brennan Scarlett did that some in the next group along with Jalen Phillips. You know, overall, I thought Miami's defense, you know, they left a lot of meat on the bone in terms of what they're going to do formationally and how they game plan. So, you know, if you're worried about maybe some leaky run defense things, I think it's more schematic stuff and just not having game plan that kind of played a bigger part in that. You know, it gave Atlanta some easy opportunities to run inside because they got caught playing twin three techniques a couple times in that slide front. And, you know, when a center's getting off on a middle linebacker right off the bat, you know, it's hard even for a guy like Bernardrick McKinney or Jerome Baker to kind of shake free of that block right off the bat. I wouldn't be too worried about the inside run stuff. I thought Van Ginkle was great. One of the things we did see, he got a penalty for the low hit on Felipe Franks, but they ran that little twist game, the tech stunt on the edge between he and Zach Sealer. That was a thing of beauty. We saw Miami run the 5-0 package, that odd Mac-0 package, a lot. Adam Butler was the nose in that package exclusively while the ones were in, and he was doing everything he could to get guys like Sam McGuavin free. Emmanuel Ogba had some nice reps on the opposite side. You can see how lethal that package is. And, you know, if you're a Shaquem Griffin fan, cover your ears, because Sam McGuavin has clearly surpassed him by a long, long way on the roster. And for my money, I think Sam McGuavin probably carved out a niche in that 5-0 package and may have leapfrogged even Duke Riley, in my opinion, for a spot on the roster. Because I'm going to assume that they're going to keep Bernardrick McKinney, Jerome Baker, obviously. I think Landon Roberts will be on there. I think Van Ginkle, Scarlett. If you consider Phillips an outside linebacker, you know, I think all those guys are safe. I think Sam McGuavin is probably the next guy ahead of Beagle, who's hurt, ahead of Shaquem Griffin, who, you know, hasn't done a thing, if we're being honest, in the preseason. You know, Calvin Munson's kind of a favorite of Coach Flo, but I just don't, you know, like the numbers game at receiver, I think it comes into play here. I don't see him making it unless they start with, you know, Roberts on IR or something like that. I don't know how that would work. Maybe Vince Beagle gets moved to IR to start the season and you see what happens there. But overall, I thought the defensive line, you know, played well. Christian Wilkins looks a little bit quicker in terms of his pass rush stuff. Raekwon Davis did fine. Adam Butler had kind of a rough night in the run game, but he makes up for it in the passing game. Zach Sealer, I will never understand how the Ravens let him go. He's a terrific player. For my money, one of the best values on the entire Dolphins roster. He was great. You know, there were a couple times where they forced everybody on the front three, to two gap, And guys maybe got caught peeking one way, and then, you know, Zach Sealer, for instance, swam move to the outside and the back cut in. You know, that gave up a 5-yard gain. They had a couple little things like that that you can clean up, and, you know, better game planning, you know, will help, you know, running run stunts and things like that will help clean that up. You know, Jerome Baker wasn't out there very long. Bernardrick McKinney, you can kind of see what a physical player he is with a lot of those Mike Fire blitzes that they ran. He also played some on the edge in that Jack front, the old Kyle Van Noy role. You know, he hasn't made a splash play per se, but that's kind of the nature of this defense. Just do your job. Someone's going to make that play. Good team defense. As far as the secondary goes, I know Javon Holland didn't play. Would have loved to have seen him kind of get in the, you know, again, air quotes, dress rehearsal game a little more. Thought Xavier Howard did fine. You know, AJ McCarron wanted to know part of him. Byron Jones lost his footing a little bit on that slant pass he gave up. You know, that's a technique thing. You know, it's fine. They'll clean that up. Nick Needham played really well, although he and Justin Coleman did have one kind of confusion error on a lock and level concept against tight trips. Coleman, I think, was supposed to go underneath and take the out route and kind of just got frozen and got in Nick Needham's way on the crossing pattern for a big first down. I think that was early in the first quarter. So just some communication errors and things like that that you can clean up. I thought Eric Rowe played a really nice game. I mean, the secondary is going to be really, really good again this year. You just kind of have come to expect that after, especially after the rosters they were putting out in 2019 and how they were playing then. So, you know, for my money, I think this defense is really good. The special teams, you know, once they get the actual units together, I'm sure will be really good again this year. Danny Crossman did a great job. Pilardi, you know, the one punt that I can recall was pretty good. Jason Sanders, his kickoffs are fantastic. He can mortar kick it. He can short kick it. He can kick it through the end zone. You know, didn't miss an extra point all of last year. You know, a 58-yarder, you know, we can excuse that. I'm sure if he had to make it in a regular season game, they're going to count on him to make it in a regular season game. So not really worried about that at all. Now, as far as the positional battles and things like that, I want to see next week. We'll go on the defense first and then come back to offense. As far as having a true nose tackle type behind Raekwon Davis, wasn't really impressed with anything John Jenkins or Benito Jones did in the game. Both of those guys got knocked off the ball on a couple of occasions. Benito Jones got double teamed one time and wasn't able to turn a knee down and make a pile. You know, he just got walked back about 6 yards. Wasn't good. You know, John Jenkins got cleaned out of a hole a couple times. You know, not things you expect. So really kind of want to see those two guys and what they do next week against Cincinnati, whose offensive line is not good. So, you know, we'll see which one of those guys they keep on the roster, or if there's someone from another team that shakes free that maybe they keep their eye on. You know, we talked about the linebacker battle a little bit. I think Aguavin is safe. Maybe that battle is now a little bit more Duke Riley versus Calvin Munson versus Vince Beagle versus, you know, Shaquem Griffin. They're not going to keep all four guys. They may not keep any of those guys. We'll have to see. You know, depth at corner is going to be tough. You know, I would hate to lose someone like Trill Williams. You know, I don't know if he would make it through waivers to the practice squad, but, you know, X, Byron, Coleman, Needham, Igbinoghene, Jamal Perry, I would want to keep all of those guys on the roster in addition to Trill Williams. You know, that'll be an interesting one to see. You know, Trill and Igbinoghene didn't get a ton of snaps against Atlanta. I would imagine they'll feature pretty heavily against the Bengals on Sunday or next Sunday. Offensively, you know, Eichenberg versus Davis is one. The backup of line spots are one. You know, I think Jacoby Brissett is kind of firmly entrenched, but I'm intrigued by Reed Sinnott. And maybe I'm a little bit of a homer because he played at the University of San Diego, which is in the Patriot League, which is where my alma mater, the University of Dayton, plays. But anyway, you know, I'd like to see a little bit more of Reed Sinnott. I thought he made some nice passes in that backup running back, the final running back spot after Gaskin, Brown, and Ahmed. You know, is probably going to be an intriguing battle. The receiver spot, you know, depending on what other transactions may happen between now and that game or shortly thereafter, is going to be an interesting battle. You know, does Seathan Carter kind of does he have a shot to get rid of Durham Smythe? I don't know. You know, those are kind of the players I want to see. You know, one guy I didn't mention already was Jason Strobridge. Had a really nice bull rush on the safety. You know, he walked Atlanta's tackle, the left tackle, back into the quarterback. When Aguavin came in and got the safety, I think he versus Jonathan Ledbetter is kind of a battle, although I would say Strobridge probably took a step or two ahead of Ledbetter just based on the game against Atlanta. And I was intrigued with some of what Strobridge did last year in very limited opportunities. Had a couple tackles for loss and a pass deflection. So would like to see some more of him, but he looked pretty quick rushing off the edge. I think he's dropped some weight, and that might be something that helps him out this year. So that is it for my roster battles against Cincinnati. You know, the Bengals, at least offensively, Joe Burrow has not played a snap this preseason. I don't know if they're going to use this as a dress rehearsal game. I know Joe Burrow has stated that he would like to play at least a little bit, and I'd imagine you'd want to see him at least a little bit before, you know, week one regular season against a Mike Zimmer defense comes at you, which is, you know, Cincinnati plays Minnesota week one. I would love to see them, you know, put Burrow in and maybe, you know, if Miami's not going to play their starters, see how their number twos do against Tyler Boyd, Ja'Marr Chase, who's not looked very good in the games this preseason. T. Higgins, on the other hand, has looked fantastic. So that would be a nice challenge for someone like Needham or Igbinoghene or even a Terrell Williams. Cincinnati, like I mentioned, pretty interesting names on their defensive line. DJ Reader, Mike Daniels, Hubbard, Khalid Kareem, Cameron Sample, Trey Hendrickson, who I forgot about. They've got a pretty deep defensive line unit. Their linebackers, in my opinion, are not very good at all. You know, Jesse Bates is one of the better free safeties in the entire league, but I think you can pick on the rest of that secondary a little bit. So whether it's Jacoby Brissett, whether Tua gets any time, just come out there and at least don't do what the Bears did when they had Andy Dalton in against Miami and against Buffalo. And, you know, Matt Nagy's crazy if he's not going to start Justin Fields week one. I'll just leave that there. And then my final thought for this episode, and this comes from, you know, some background in sports announcing, but Jason Taylor as a non-quarterback being a color commentator was absolutely fantastic. I think if he wanted to do that for his day job, he could do it. You know, he was great. I like the analysis. He's short, to the point. He talks about actual terminology. You know, cover one rat was mentioned. I don't know how many heads that went over, but for me, a football junkie, that was great to listen to. And I say this, I want to mention it because, you know, I'm a Cincinnati Reds fan, and obviously you probably heard the Tom Brenneman thing and all that went down last year. The Reds kind of restructured some of their TV and radio crews, and they brought in Barry Larkin, who's my all-time favorite Cincinnati Reds player, my second favorite baseball player ever behind Frank Thomas. They brought him in as a color commentator, and I love Barry and I always will. And he offers up some fun stories and things like that, but he doesn't really add much of anything, you know, in terms of baseball knowledge. He's very, very old school, you know, just kind of tries to relate it to his era and his day. And, you know, it's not nearly anywhere as bad as, you know, Bob Greasy and Dick Stockton, but just be appreciative of what Jason Taylor is doing. And if he ever, you know, wanted to do that for a network professionally, I think he would have a future in it. So that's going to wrap up episode 27 of Dolphins Talk Weekly. Again, please follow me on Twitter at KevinMD4. Follow the show, give me a review and rating on iTunes, Spotify, Spreaker. I will be at the Bengals-Dolphins game next week in Cincinnati on Sunday. The podcast will be a little late being recorded. That is a 4 p.m. start. So, given the game and stuff, I probably won't be home till 8 or 8:30. I'm going with my brother-in-law who has season tickets. His tickets are fantastic if you want to be close to the field. They're in like the 8th row in the end zone where the visiting team has normally warmed up in the past. So, I'll get to see a close look of the Dolphins. but they are not that great in terms of reviewing the all 22 aspect of it, or even like the TV camera angle of it. So I'll probably at least one or two times watch through the game on TV. I'll record it and do that before we do the podcast. So we may be recording the podcast Monday or Tuesday night of next week. So it'll be a little late, but it will be out there. I'll do a full write up and review about that game for the podcast. So again, thank you guys. Have a great week. Fins up.